Hello and good evening, America. Good morning. It's good afternoon, Australia. Beg my pardon. You're listening to Tony Lontis live on Radio Tony, and we are Tracy and Tony, and we're tackling trauma. This is the last in our series of tackling trauma. And before we get on the show, just a reminder that we have a downloadable trauma workbook available on Radio Tony under resources, and it tells you all the information of how to connect with either Tracy or I. And particularly, I'd love you if you have time to have a look at that workbook. A reminder that neither Tracy nor I are psychologists. However, we have decades of experience dealing and helping and healing through and from trauma. So a warning that if you get triggered by anything that we discuss on the show today, please reach out and talk to someone. Don't bear that alone. And before Tracy introduces me, we're swapping roles today. Normally I'm the lead, but we're going to swap this week and let Tracy do the lead. But I want to tell you about the gorgeous person that is Tracy Horton. She is an international award-winning speaker, author, and qualified life coach. And for over 25 years, she's been helping people rebuild their lives and recover from trauma to live the best versions of themselves. I've had the most pleasurable time working with Tracy. Not only is she a wonderful business colleague, but truly one of my best friends in the world, and I love her dearly and feel incredibly safe allowing her to interview me for the first time in a very long time. So, wonderful people, we're going to get on with the show. I don't know what it holds, but I am in Tracy's hands today, and over to you. Here's the glorious Tracy Horton.
Hello, everybody. You know, one of the reasons I'm doing this show is because of Tony Lontis, who is just one of the most incredible people. And every now and then you meet people that just impact you heart to heart. And for Tony and I, that was a definite instant connection moment for us. And so today, being the last show, because she does hold such a beautiful story and she's such a great example of someone who has gotten through it, I said to her, let's reverse roles and let's just talk about you today. So my gorgeous friend, Tony Lontis, lives on a very beautiful farm with her gorgeous husband. She has two grown children that don't live with her and a bunch of animals. There wouldn't be an animal I know that wouldn't be welcome at that farm. Tony has a heart for animals that's a second to none and a green thumb. So at any time you would to ever see her backyard, it is always in full bloom. And how she does that, I don't know. We're very, very different people. I live in the middle of suburbia, and she is forever grounded with her feet in some sort of puddle dealing with some animal. But what I love most about her is she is a victor. And Tony has a very honest story. And Tony, what I would love for you to do just for the next sort of 10 minutes or so is just tell all the people that have been listening to you, that have heard you facilitate everybody else's stories, just tell them yours as much as you want to tell, but please just tell them your beautiful story.
Oh, Tracy, thank you. Tracy knows how much I adore my animals, and they've also been so much a part of my healing. I have two llamas and seven goats, two dogs, some recalcitrant ducks that wander in and out, and one very cranky chicken. And we are blessed to live in a rural hinterland that borders the coast. We have our own orchard and we produce much of our own fruit, not so much the veggies because I haven't had a lot of time this year, but the goats actually eat lots of hay, which produces the mulch for the garden, and the llamas have the wonderful ideal of pooing in one spot, so they provide the fertilizer for the whole farm. So we are very blessed, and again, that's been part of my healing story and journey. So beginning at the beginning, I was born in the late 60s, and I was born with a congenital facial defect called a preauricular sinus. These congenital defects happen in about 1% of the population, and they are nasty little things. They are present as a tiny hole on some portion of the outer side of your face, usually around the ear somewhere. And they are problematic in that they are forever getting infected. And usually they are in close proximity to that vital facial nerve that helps you smile, wink, eat, close your eyes, raise your eyebrows, etc. What happened with mine was it proceeded to get infected continuously in my before I was the age of two. And by the time I was two, the final infection slash surgery to try and fix it resulted in a permanent severed left-sided facial nerve, which resulted in me having a smile that looks like I've had a stroke. Now, before you start to worry, this started to heal in my 40s. And I'll tell you a bit more of that, about that in later in the story. But for me, childhood was pretty horrible. When you can't smile, you lose the ability to interact with other human beings. And I didn't know that then. I know that now. But I didn't want to smile. And so I was often bullied, labeled as non-social, and I hated photographs. And so all through childhood and into my early teens, this resulted in a very low self-esteem. Add to that a pretty dysfunctional family life and living really remotely, rurally, and not having access to the best doctors and the best environments. I kind of was very ill-prepared for adult life. I took the first job that I could to get out of home at 17. I went nursing, and man, what a shock that was. Back in those days, nurses still trained and lived on campus at the hospital, and the matron controlled our every breath. I'm talking about needing passes to go outside the hospital environment, needing passes to leave the nurses' quarters, having to be back at a certain time, etc., etc., etc. And if we made too much noise, the matron lived in the flat below us and she would use the broom to bang on the floor and tell us to be quiet. So quite archaic by today's standards. So my entry into young adult life was not great. So sexual assault, domestic violence, I had a child outside of marriage, and that set me up for quite terrible decisions into my 30s, where I continued to pick men who were verbally or physically aggressive, and I continued to not value myself. It wasn't until my 40s when I had my first major background. In the background of all that was an undiagnosed depression and anxiety that I refused to get help for because of the stigma around mental health. My nursing training taught me that to have a label of a mental health diagnosis was not something that I wanted. So anytime someone tried to get me help, I just didn't take it. So into my 40s, by the time I reached my 40s, I was in the most destructive relationship of my life. And the man in that relationship was portrayed to me as my knight in shining armor. And I was so controlled by him and his rhetoric that I believed that I was nothing without him. So at 40 or thereabouts, I had a nervous breakdown, a major, what is technically termed as a major depressive break. Finally, I went to a doctor and was absolutely blessed to have a GP who sat me down and said, "Tony, your mind, body and soul has had enough. I am begging you to stop. We need to get you on some medication. We need to get you some help, and I need you to start healing." And for the first time in my life, I actually listened and thought, oops, this is not great. His diagnosis for me at the time, if I didn't seek help, was that I wouldn't be here in 12 months. I was in a deep, dark, black place, and I had no idea how to get out. So I started on that journey of slowly starting to delve into my thought patterns, my behaviours, and what life had been for me. And I started to understand more fully that I had suffered trauma, not just one trauma, but multiple traumas across my life. And as I started to heal from those things, my life slowly started to improve. It was also at this time that I had my daughter disclose a history of sexual abuse at this man I was about to marry at that time. So quite a lot of trauma and heartache to deal with all at once, which saw me healing and dealing effectively for 10 years straight until I got to my 50s, when I started to feel a little better about myself, when I started to realize that I had value and that healing and hope is available to anyone who seeks it, and that I didn't have to be a product of what happened to me. And as in Tracy's words, I started to rewrite my story. And in doing so, I actually did write my own story with the idea that I wanted other people to know that there is hope. There is always hope, that there is always someone to reach out and talk to. And that if you just take that first step, which I'm telling you is the hardest part of the process, just take that first step, just reach out and talk to someone, and the rest you're able to do slowly and step by step. As I said, that process was very long for me. The most intensive was those first 10 years, and I still, to this day, continue to heal and deal and learn. But now I talk about it because other people need to realize that you can get through the trauma in your life, that you don't need to let it define you and write your story. And that's why I do what I do with the wonderful people like Tracy in my life. We do this not for you to feel sorry for us, but to show you the way, to show you the way to a better, more wonderful life, and it's yours to have. So that's kind of my show in a nutshell. After I produced the book, I went on to produce the audio version, and so a chance conversation led to streaming radio, and now it's led to streaming video and audio shows, and next year we will launch on Binge TV in the US as well. So that's me in a nutshell.
Excellent. I love it. One of the things that I noticed that you said was that you were a little afraid of the label. And I wanted to pick that up with you because I think that actually when people, you know, we all know what's going on. I'm a big believer we all intrinsically know. And I you know, I'm listening to the story thinking, here's this beautifully intelligent nurse that feared her own label. But don't you find, Tony, that most of the time when it actually comes down, like didn't you find when you were sitting with the doctor and he actually told you, it was actually a bit of relief?
Oh, God,
yeah.
Did
you find that it just made sense?
Yeah. Yes. It was clearly a defining moment in my life when he sat me down and explained to me that my brain was tired. It was worn out from not having help, not talking to someone and not dealing. And the gravity with which he helped me understand that it's just like high blood pressure, except your brain is completely exhausted and you need to rest it. You need to get the help that helps you get through this. See, if I had have accepted help earlier on, then I may not have gotten to that point where I was completely broken down. And I guess that's part of the passion why I talk about it so openly now, is because I don't want other people to get to that point, and you don't have to. It just simply is accepting help from someone to get you the help that you need. And I'd refused that help because I'm, you know, pretty stubborn, generally speaking. And because I was terrified to be known as someone with a mental health illness. And now I actually embrace it because I'm one of the majority. Most people will have some sort of mental health diagnosis at some point in their life. And it doesn't mean that life ends. Life doesn't end. It just becomes a new reality. And in learning to deal with that mental health diagnosis, it was such a relief in that office that day that he gave a name to my constant tears. He gave a name to my conscious, constant anxious thoughts. I was anxious and fearful about everything, and he gave a name to it, and that was an immense relief, an absolute immense relief. Even though I was still crying in his chair, I'm like, oh my God, there's a name for this. I'm not crazy. So that's the thing. I don't want to be known as crazy, and it's not crazy. It's just the way your unique brain has coped with trauma. And once you learn that, understand it, things get better.
Yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes too, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I find that people get a bit confused around nouns and verbs. And label is a verb, it's
yes.
a descriptive word. You know, when you look at a label in your clothing or you look at a label on a jar, all it's doing is describing the contents. And I find yes. for me, because, you know, as you know, I too have had people give me labels, and I have a son with yes. an autistic label, a grandson with an autistic label. But all I find they do is they're just descriptive words. They're not nouns. They're not who we are. You know, you're not yeah. Tony depressive. You're Tony Lontis who yes. suffered depression. You know, and I think sometimes
yes.
we fear this because we get it mixed up. We think, you know, this is the noun that says who I am. No, it's just a verb. A label is a description. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
And that we don't need to
yeah,
fear them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tony, I really love your story about depression, and I'd like to focus on it for a couple of minutes because we're heading into Christmas. And
yes.
I think it's a really hard time for people that have true depression when everybody else is around them forcing them to interact and forcing them to get happy. And I think there's a lot of self-condemnation and guilt that comes on some of these people. So I was wondering if you could talk about how you handled those first few Christmases and family gatherings
yeah.
when it was new and raw to you, when you were so in, still in that place.
Yeah, yeah. I actually had to learn about creating boundaries. And I have to confess that I was slow to learn that. And creating boundaries is about protecting you and your healing. And for me, I needed to realize that I'm not going to feel like always being happy. And that's okay. You know, you don't have to be happy all the time. You are capable of being happy and joyful and all of those things. But when you're first dealing with that deep, dark depression, it is incredibly hard to be around other people that are naturally happy. And so I had to put boundaries around what I did and who I did that with. And it took me probably 5 years to work out how to do that and what that meant. And it also meant having courage to say, no, I won't be attending that Christmas barbecue without an explanation. Just, no, I can't come. No, I won't be there. And realizing that I didn't need to explain to anyone, but I needed to protect the healing that was happening in my life. I think that's really important when we come to Christmas, particularly anyone who's been diagnosed with depression this year. Understand that Christmas will be tough. That's okay. You will get through it, but you may need to step back and not do all the social things that you normally do. You'll get back to it. You'll be able to do that again. But if you're new in your diagnosis, please protect yourself. Please protect the conversations you have with people that don't understand. And when I say that, I understand Tracy because I've had depression. I understand other people with anxiety disorders because I've battled with that. The beautiful people who've never had to battle with depression don't always understand it. That's okay. That's not a judgment of them. But if you've got depression and you need to talk to someone, please pick someone who understands depression, a clinician who specializes in that area. And as you start to heal, again, protect your healing, protect your mind, and be really tough with your boundaries, because that's important. You will get back to doing the things that you used to love and do, but protect yourself, particularly at Christmas.
Yeah.
Did you find that, Tracy, that you had to learn?
Oh, definitely. And it was, like I said last week, it was difficult for me because I cut a lot of cultural barriers that you don't touch. They're non-negotiables. But this year I've worked with a lot of young people with depression and anxiety. Mm. And one of the things I've been saying to them in the last couple of weeks is it's okay to have this moment. And if you don't allow yourself to have this moment, you're going to have it some other time. So, you know, like, I don't know what it's like in America, but I would presume it's very similar to here. People have hit mid-December, they've hit the 10th of December, and they're going crazy because we're desperate. We've had all our boundaries lifted so we can actually be together now, and people are desperate for connection. Mm. They're desperate, and so they're going shopping and they're doing all this stuff and they're making all these plans because, you know, we've been shut off a little bit. But I say to my clients, because I've got one little girl, and she's listening today because she's really struggling to do this, and I said it's okay to have that moment. It's really okay to have that moment. And, you know, Tony, I love your honesty and I love the way that you talk about it, because I feel like we've ripped the Band-Aid off something really sacred. I feel like a lot of women suffer with anxiety and depression. A lot of men suffer with anxiety and depression because we live in an anxious world. We live in a really uncertain world, and I'm loving this conversation. So I just wanted to keep it going and ask you, when you left the doctor's surgery and your tears stopped, what were some of the other things that you did to help yourself with your natural body and mind?
Do you know one of the things in that doctor's office that day? He actually provided me with the start of some tools. He said, you need to walk every day. I want you to start with a 5-minute walk. And at that time, I sort of had stopped walking as much as I used to, but I started with 5 minutes walking each day. I think I might have even just done it every second day, because anytime I sort of went out of the house, I'd burst into tears again. And he also said to me, just let the tears fall until they fall no more. And the other thing he said to me was, be kind to yourself. I want you to start to recognize the thoughts that are going through your mind, and I want you to start to talk to yourself as if you're the most loving person you've ever met. And that was hard for me, Tracy. Like, I used to beat myself up so much. And the way that I started to do that was, and you'll know this story because I've talked about it often and I still do this, I started to write loving things on my mirror, like, I'm okay. You are okay. I am loved. Mm-hmm. This will pass. So just those little phrases on my mirror to remind me every time I saw them. And then I started to say them in my head as I went through my day, trying to flip the negative thoughts that bombarded me. Like, I used to think of them, I used to think of my positive thoughts like the old Pac-Man game. So there was all these little negative thoughts running around my brain, and the positive thoughts were the Pac-Man coming along to eat them up and take them out of my thoughts. That's how I had a visual of my brain trying to grab these negative thoughts, munch them out, and replace them with good thoughts. So the other thing is, absolutely be kind to yourself. Be really kind to yourself. Allow yourself to have those moments. If you need to cry, then cry. If you need to yell and scream, then yell and scream. I had a pool noodle and I had moments of intense anger. When I felt those moments, I would grab that pool noodle and I would hit it on the bed until I exhausted myself. So these little tips are what helped me start to heal and deal. And the other thing that I found really important was when life was really, really tough, when I was in that big, deep black hole filled with anger and rage and tears, I just started to say to myself, this is really shit, pardon the French, but I just need to breathe. Breathe in and breathe out. Sometimes I could only manage that for a minute at a time. In that really intense period, a minute at a time. And then I'd have to go and have a smoke or have a drink or whatever it was, because I smoked heavily and I still drank heavily at that time. But slowly, as I consistently started to do these things, and I didn't beat myself up if I didn't do those things every day, I just started every day with the intention that I was going to try as many of those little tips as I could, with the understanding that I need to be kind and loving and patient with myself. It had taken 40 years to get to this point. It wasn't going to change overnight, Tracy. Like, 40 years is, you've got to take it slow and you've got to be kind to yourself. So for your beautiful young lady listening, the biggest thing is be gentle, loving and kind with yourself. Allow yourself to feel angry, to feel sad, to cry, but do some things that help you pass through those moments. Little simple things that work for you, and it is about finding what works for you. So listen to other people's suggestions, and I'm sure Tracy's got some fabulous suggestions as well.
Yeah. You know, Tony, I love this conversation, because we're demystifying and debunking something that shouldn't be precious in our society. You know, if a woman's pregnant and she wants to eat odd food, we accommodate that. And if a woman has cancer or a man has cancer and they don't want to eat, or they want to go and spend $1,000 on something crazy, we accommodate that. And yet it's funny that when we look at somebody with mental health still drinking, we kind of want to stop them. And I love that you said that. I love that you addressed that, you know, we just have to be kind. We have to take it a step at a time. I'm very close to you, so I know you're not a heavy drinker or a smoker now. And but I love that you embraced that. I love that you gave yourself that permission, because I think that mental health should be treated exactly like those other conditions I just talked about. It's something that's gone wrong. Something's just debunked in the system. There's been a glitch. There's been a stop. And, you know, and I think the more normal we made it, it sounds like you made it really normal. Sounds like you just, once you got to breaking point, you just walked into it and you felt it. And I would imagine that's probably why you healed so well, would you say?
I think so. As you said before, Tracy, that moment in that doctor's surgery where he actually gave me permission to label what my life was and what was going on in my brain, that was immensely helpful. Like, you can't underestimate that initial, I think this is what's happening. And it was just like, oh gosh, that makes so much sense. And it was very much like he gave me permission to understand my diagnosis and to start slowly working on it. And I say slowly because you really need to take it at a pace that is uniquely you. And some people will move through those things faster. Some people will move through those things slower. It's very individual. And giving yourself permission to take the time that it needs is the start of it as well. And demystifying it, like making sure that you understand that the way you feel is the way you feel. It won't always be that way, and it will pass. It's going to be okay. All those sorts of things helped me. And yes, a bowl of red wine at night and 40 cigarettes a day helped at that time. I didn't have to tackle those things right there and then. There was plenty of time to tackle those things a year or two down the track.
Yeah. And I love that. I love the realness of that. I really do, because I want to demystify it. I want to debunk it. I don't want people feeling bad. You know, it took you 40 years to get to that doctor's office. It wasn't going to take you 4 months to get better. It was going to be a process. We all knew it. You know, as with me, you know, it took me 20 years to start my ball rolling. Yeah. And then people would say to me after 6 months, are you still on that tangent? Are you still, what's with your boundaries? You're not over it yet. I was like, come on, guys, 20 years and you're looking at me in 4 months' time saying, you still can't come to family events, Tracy? You're still making it about you?
Yeah.
And I think that it's really good that we do explain to the listeners it's going to take time, because it took time to get there. So, Tony, I would imagine, as with every woman who got to that breaking point, you had around you family and friends that were contributing to it. Can you talk a little bit? Can you talk a little bit about the courage it took to step away from them, address them, or refocus them, or educate them? Because I think most of our listeners aren't going to the doctors like they should, like you and I once did, because of this. So could we just unpack this for a little bit together to help them?
Yeah.
Because, you know, those everyone around you reacts too, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you know, I have an incredibly amazing husband, and I hadn't met him yet at that time. So I was actually reliant on a number of therapists and my GP in those initial years. I didn't meet my husband until a little further down the track. And when I met him, I had a very open, honest conversation about what was going on in my life. And his blessing to me was that he became involved then. He wanted to understand what it meant for me to live in that space. And so he would often come with me to the doctor's appointments, where the doctor would explain to him, and he grasps an understanding. As for the greater family, I had to be really careful about how I spoke and interacted with them. And I'll tell you quite honestly that early in the piece, I still attended some of the events where I really didn't want to go. And retrospectively, I should not have gone. So one of those was a funeral for a particularly nasty extended family member. I didn't want to go, but I'm a people pleaser, and I still hadn't learnt how to not please people and put myself first. So I went to this funeral, saw the extended family, and completely lost the plot. I started shaking and crying, and I had to physically walk out. And at that time, my father, bless him, actually grabbed my arm, walked me out, and walked alongside me and said, "It's okay, just breathe." Now, for me, that actually was a little more undoing than I planned, because I'd never had a very close relationship with my father, and him showing me that love in that instant made everything just a little bit worse. But the end of the story is that I walked back and said, "Look, I'm sorry, I can't stay, I'm leaving," and I left. And that was the first time where I realized that I had the courage to make those decisions that kept me safer and protected. And then from that time on, I just didn't go to things that I felt that would trigger me, panic me, or cause reactions that were better not having to face until I felt stronger. So now it's a different story. Now, you know, I choose what I can attend and what I do and don't attend, but no longer do I feel that I have to, because at the end of the day, you need to do what's best for you. You're the only one that can look after you. No one, lots of other people can care for you. Lots of other people can help you, but only you make the final decisions about what is best for you. And it's not selfish. And we need to understand that making decisions for you and your life is not selfish. This is what we should do. And this sometimes contributes to why we have depression and anxiety in our society, because we constantly make decisions about what other people want us to do versus what you want to do. And that's a big learning in that whole space, is those boundaries around what's right for you. And now I tend to ask myself, is this right for me? Does this make sense to me? And that's where I make my decision. Whereas before I was always, oh, my parents expect me to do this, or the family expects me to do this, or I should, there's that word, I should go to this, I should go to this event. Well, no, you shouldn't. Only if that is right for you. And Tracy, I'm assuming that you have had that experience as well.
For sure. And I hate the word should, because it's quite manipulative, really. And it's, you know, like healing is our responsibility. You and I both say that all the time to all the clients.
Yes.
Healing is your responsibility. You know, I'm my own person and I have to own it. And when we become our own source of healing, and you know, sorting our lives out, then we can resource with people and beautiful men like we're both married to walk into our lives. But before that, until we become our own source, we can never attract that. And I really love that about it.
I was going to say, Tracy, that's another concept that I had to learn as well, that before that bad point in my life, I was searching for love, affection and happiness outside of myself. I had to learn that I was the source of love, happiness, and in fact, and I had the responsibility, and it was my choice about whether I felt love. And that whole idea of looking inside yourself for what you need, I had to learn that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And we all live with our story. Like I say, you can heal from the trauma, but you still have the story. I didn't heal myself from being somebody who wasn't sexually abused. I was sexually abused, but I don't live in the trauma. I don't live as part of that story. It's just part of my personal story, which you would understand because you're beautifully healed. So tell me now, what do you put in place in your life to protect yourself? What do you do now? Because I would imagine like me, but very different ones, I would presume. You still have triggers. You still have moments. You still have...
Yes.
Because, you know, it takes a lot to live healed. So can you just talk a little bit about some of your triggers and how you manage those?
Yeah. So, again, a bit of a heartfelt story in 2020. So this is a long time past that initial break back in 2007. And just to be very vulnerable with the listeners today, I actually had to put in my biggest boundary and boundaries this year. So I actually had to stop talking to my parents, because those conversations were so negatively charged that it was starting to have a physical effect on my body. And it was, without a doubt, the hardest boundary that I've ever had to put in place. And that was closely followed by another boundary around my beautiful daughter. And I won't go further into that one, but they're tough. You know, I go to pick up the phone and call my parents and stop myself, because I know that the conversation will be no different. And all it will do is trigger me into a spiral of, I'm that bad daughter, I'm not good enough, I'm flawed, etc. And I don't want to go there, because life is so much more than that. And I want to present to people as an authentic person who's worked out how to manage her life in the background of depression and anxiety, because for the most part, that's pretty well managed. But you do have to be careful. The other things that I do, Tracy, are, as you know, I love to garden. I love to jump on the mower and mow our acreage with my headphones on, listening to a beautiful meditation or listening to an audiobook. And gardening is my outlet. I love walking along the beach, and I know Tracy does too. Putting your feet in salt water. Salt water is incredibly cleansing. And then some other little things like taking long, deep baths, sitting in my massage chair, and sitting with my goats just in the quiet, cool of an evening, just going and sitting with them. Because you know those goats, they just adore me. They sit beside me, they snuggle up to me, they come round close, and it's just, it's a glorious feeling. They never judge me. They never had bad words to say. They're always just pure, unadulterated love. And so if people find those things that are special to them, and for some people it might be going on a big bike ride, it might be hiking, it might be time with the grandchildren, whatever it is for you that makes your heart feel that beautiful, abundantly joyful, grateful, gracious feeling in your heart, do that and do it as often as you need to fill your cup up. Because the world will keep coming at you. And if you don't do that, it keeps coming at you no matter what. So you need to protect, again, that healing and that hard work that you've done. Because as Tracy will tell you, healing can be pretty hard work, but it's so worth it, isn't it, Trace?
Yeah. Well, it is, because, listen, trauma is uninvited, as we've said this whole series, and it comes unannounced, mm-hmm. and it leaves us with stuff we didn't want. So you have to take that trauma and deal with it. And sometimes you have to mm-hmm. be very selfish. But like we always say, Tony, there's never no one. I always say to my client, there's never nobody. But we're so conditioned to think it has to be mum and dad, or it has to be our children, yes. or our husband. But you know what? Sometimes they don't understand. You know, like you said, we've yep. both had therapists, we've both had counsellors, we've both had GPs. But there's also, you know, even if you live on your own and you don't have anyone that you think cares about you, there are care places. You know, there's yes. the Salvation Army. I don't know who they are in America. Sorry about that. But, you know, there's all these care places, these churches, these support places, these community programs. Somebody cares enough to listen. Somebody cares enough to give you the phone number of a GP that's enlightened enough to help you. So in vain of that, Tony, right now to the girl or the guy sitting at home, like yeah. you and I, broken, and they just haven't rung the GP, they just haven't done it. They know they need to, because they wake at 3 a.m. every morning desperately yep. upset. They catch themselves crying at stuff. They are self-medicating.
Yep.
Just in your beautiful heart, tell them how to take the first step. Tell them how to take
guys,
it.
That first step, know if you understand right now that taking that first step is hard, but once you take the first step, that's your first step to healing. That's your first step to a better life. That's your first step to getting through it. So whatever it is that you have to do to get that first step, and if it's just jumping on a call to any of the online call practices in Australia, it's Lifeline. In America, I know that there is plenty of centres that you can call. Just do one thing. At 3 o'clock in the morning, and I know this for a fact for many, many people, 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning is the time of the morning when you will be inclined to feel worst. I know that's true for Tracy as it is for me, and I know for a lot of her clients that's a key early hours of the morning. In that instance, when you feel like you can't do anything else, jump on the computer and Google help needed. You'll be surprised at the amazing amount of help available to you in that instant. And all you've done is jump on the computer, your phone, your laptop, whatever. If you're by yourself, that's the best strategy. And make an appointment to see and talk to someone, or talk to someone in that instant. There's always someone, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what country you are in the world, there is always someone that will pick up that call. And that's the start of it. That's all you have to do. That one little step right there and then, when it feels like the world is imploding and you can't go on, that's all it takes. The first step is the hardest. After that, everything starts to get a little easier. Yeah. And it might take a while, and it might take an extended period to get through. But all you've got to do is take that first step, make that call, connect with that friend, take that chance, because you will be rewarded in getting through whatever it is that is troubling you and causing you such depression and anxiety and heartache and pain. You know, you don't want to go through life living in pain, do you, Tracy?
No. And, you know, Tony, people told me this, but I never believed it till I did it. The actual self-control and
yes,
and pressure and energy it takes to stay pretending you're not unhealthy is twice what it takes to heal. It's just that stepping over. It's just that stepping over. It's just taking that first movement. And, you know, the show is quickly coming to an end, and we are sitting at Christmas. And I always think to myself that it is always bittersweet for most people, because seldom does any family get together and somebody isn't missing from that year. You know, somebody passed away, somebody moved away, somebody made a decision. You know, every year our family gets together. We're never the same people we were a year ago. It's always different.
Yeah.
And you see it mostly in the children who have sprouted up and changed. And so I made a decision consciously, because in the Tongan culture we give something of ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't buy traditional gifts, we give something of ourselves. And so I made a conscious decision a couple of years ago to give my children every year a portion of my life in written form, because I'm an author and a writer, and it's the thing I love to do most. And it's been really amazing how after just a couple of years they're looking forward to the next one and how much they've learned. But what I've realized is that every person has a story. Every person has something that other people need to hear. And so, Tony, as I hand back to you and we round out the show, just tell people the value of their story, because, Tony, your story impresses me and encourages me every single time. And as you know, earlier this year, one of my daughters became very ill very suddenly, and your strength and understanding of what she was going through really did help me not to fall apart and implode in a moment when I really needed to be strong, and I am forever grateful. So just as a hand back, and I hope all the listeners weren't too bamboozled today as we swapped roles, because I don't think I was quite as professional as you, but anyway, we are what we are, and those that listen to us know us. But I just really love us to leave with the people that this Christmas, the best gift they could give themselves is understanding their own story and having the guts to live it.
Yeah. Tracy, there's such power in your own unique story, whatever that is. It is uniquely your life and your story. No one can take that away from you. And absolutely, other people need to hear about you, because the tips and my story will help lots of different people, but your story could also help people, because humans are unique individuals. No one's the same, no one heals the same, no one goes through things the same. So by talking about your story and being open about what you've been through, what you've suffered, what you've learnt, that helps someone else. And this Christmas, I want you to remember that you are special and unique, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you've experienced, no matter what your life looks like or has looked like, it's uniquely yours. And that's really special. And it's important that you embrace who you are and your uniqueness, because I can't be Tracy, Tracy can't be me, I can't be you, and vice versa. You are a unique and special human being. So no matter what you're suffering at this point in time, you are special. You were created for a reason. And once you figure out what that reason is, no matter what it is, your life will be forever changed and you'll start on that journey of healing and learning. And it's a wonderful thing to be human and go through life experiencing what it is to be human. Before we go, though, I just want to remind you that you have been listening to a series on tackling trauma with Tracy and Tony. I want to remind you that you can find Tracy on tracyhorton.com. That's Tracy, T-R-A-C-E-Y, Horton.com. And you can find links to her amazing book, The Unhappy Smile. And this book is so special because it gives you practical tips, practical tips and information to help you in all sorts of fashion. It gives you exercises to do, and it's written in a way that is beautifully easy to understand. It's free-flowing and it's written with love from Tracy. So tracyhorton.com, you can grab a book. If you've missed that link, jump onto radiotony.com, jump under co-hosts, find Tracy, and you will find links directly to her website, her book, her email, and you'll also find our downloadable trauma workbook. And if you want to give yourself a gift at Christmas and that you want to start to think about what's upsetting and painful in your life, grab the workbook, sit down, work through it, grab Tracy's book, and start 2021 with a new look at how life could be for you. It's been a real privilege to do this series of shows with Tracy. She has some amazing things happening in 2021, and she has newly launched a new business with her husband called The Woman Whisperer and The Male Whisperer. And Tracy, we've got 2 minutes. Do you just want to quickly tell our audience about your new recently launched businesses?
Okay. So coming in January, people will be able to become part of the Whisper Legacy. And the reason Paul and I got together and did this is because we're getting older, Tony. And we've realized that we have a bunch of things to hand over. Because here's the thing. We are made up of spirit, soul, and body. And we live in a culture that teaches us a lot about the body, teaches us very little about the soul, which is why we're doing this show, but it teaches us nothing about the spirit, which is your intuition, your deep rhythmic energy, your ability to communicate and feel the universe and know your place and know who you are. So this course is all about how to understand that and then live out of the others in a more fulfilled way. And I'm really excited because I feel like people are getting really savvy, Tony, and so I've made a really strong decision in this course. I'm going to give a lot of legacy away. I'm going to answer all the questions people have been asking. Once they've done this, they won't have to ask other questions. And we're doing the female and the male whisperer straight up front. We were going to launch it this month, but I have decided, out of respect to my family, who are a big part of my business, and my two daughters, who are very hands-on. One's my VA. Once my PA, they are actually both unwell physically. And so I've made a decision to honour that. And so we're going to launch it in January, second week of January. And because of that, we'll just do some fun with it and just do it then. So that's very exciting. And I've loved being a part of this. And Tony, we're going to come back, aren't we? Of course, for us on this side of the hemisphere, this is our big holiday, America. This is our June, July. So we are going to take a few weeks off, but we are going to come back. We're going to come back together. I love working with you, Tony.
Yes. I love working with you too. So this is the last show in 2020 series of Tackling Trauma with Tracy and Tony. We will be back next year in some form. We haven't decided quite what that will look like, but we look forward to chatting to you. Just a reminder that if you miss the live shows, jump on to bbsradio.com/radiotony and you will find all the replays of the show. Alternatively, jump onto radiotony.com where you'll find where you can reconnect with the shows. We love to hear from you. So if you're in need of information or you have questions over the holiday break, Tracy and I will be around and we will endeavour to answer any questions that you have. But we look forward to having you back again next year and we thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Tackling Trauma with Tracy and Tony. And that's our lot for this week. Thank you so much, Tracy. Wishing you an amazing Christmas. I know we'll talk later on. And thank you, listeners, for joining us this year with Tackling Trauma with Tony and Tracy. And what a tongue twister. Thanks for that, everyone. Bye, Merry Tracy, Christmas, and everybody. Bye for now.